Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. For BetterHomesAndGardens.com, are plants in your shower a good idea? Here's what experts say. Experts explain what plants in a shower need to thrive, plus share their best shower plant recommendations by Leanne Potts. Shower plants are a thing. You've seen online lists of tropical plants to keep in the shower and Instagram feeds of walk-in showers that are so full of tropical plants, they look like large terrariums with room for you to bathe. The thinking is that putting plants in the shower brings a biophilic design and a spa-like vibe to your bathroom while taking advantage of the humid air and wet conditions many tropical plants love. But before jumping on this trend, keep in mind that not all showers are plant-friendly, and not all plants like living in a shower. We asked plant experts how to successfully keep plants in a shower and which plants are best for this situation. What plants in a shower need? So, is your shower compatible with plant life? Plants can work in the shower, but it has to be the right plant, and you have to make sure that your shower is set up to provide the right environment, says Carly Paluzzi, co-founder of BWH Plant Company in Orlando, Florida. There are so many factors that tie into whether you can keep a plant alive in the shower, says Paris Lalakata, Plant Education and Community Engagement Associate at The Sill, an online plant seller based in New York. I've had plants in my shower for 4 years, so if you have the correct setup, plants definitely can do well in a shower. Two key factors to consider are light levels and air circulation. Light sources. Shower plants need at least some light to thrive, much like any houseplant. You're not going to be able to keep any plant alive in a shower unless they can get some sunlight, Lalakata says. The best setup would be a shower with a window or skylight that lets in some sun. If your shower is windowless and there's no skylight, which is probably the case with most showers, consider putting a clip-on grow lamp with a flexible neck outside the shower that can deliver light through the glass doors to the plants inside the shower. Air circulation. Your plants can get too much humidity in the shower, so you might need a bathroom fan or a window you can crack. Air circulation is just as important as light because your plants dry out a little faster, Lalakata says. If there's too much moisture on your plant's foliage for too long, they could develop a fungus or water-soaked lesions. If plants were in a shower used by more than one person, several showers a day may be too much for even the most humidity-loving plants, Lalakata says. She has seen problems with shower plants in New York apartments where small and cramped is the norm. Paluzzi says that bigger showers that aren't used by a family of six multiple times a day should be okay without ventilation. You don't need massive ventilation or you are defeating the purpose of putting plants in a shower for the high humidity, Paluzzi says. Pick plants that like it muggy and humid and will thrive in that environment. And here's a tip. Plants grown via the Japanese art of Kokodama, where plant roots are in a moss-covered ball of soil wrapped with string, are a good pick for the shower. They fit in a space too small for potted plants and moderate their moisture level better than plants in soil. 7 best plants for a shower. Choosing the right plants for a shower is crucial. Not all plants are cut out for the shower, says Paluzzi. Choose plants that thrive in high humidity, low light, and a warm tropical environment. Here are some shower plants recommended by our experts. Calathea. Calatheas like a shower environment because they love that high humidity, Paluzzi says. That one really depends on your lighting. Calatheas do best in medium to bright light, so you'll need a sunny shower or a grow light. Pitcher plant. Pitcher plants evolve to hold water and they grow in bogs, so they're naturals for a shower. They're going to soak up all that humidity, Paluzzi says. Philodendron. Philodendrons are a good option because they're easy to grow, Paluzzi says. They thrive in low light, another reason they will do well in a shower. Number 4 on the list is Pothos. These trailing tropicals make great shower plants because they like humidity and can live in low light conditions. Pothos are adaptable, really pretty, and easy to grow, Paluzzi says. Fern. Any type of fern that's lacy and feathery is a good pick for a shower, Lalakata says. They love moisture on the foliage and a lot of moisture in general. She recommends rabbit's foot fern. Baluzi recommends bird's nest fern. Number 6, air plants. Epiphytic plants that get nutrition through moisture in the air instead of through roots and soil are a natural choice for a shower. I have a couple of air plants that live in my shower window, La Licata says. She recommends hanging a staghorn fern mounted to a board in a brightly lit shower. And number 7 on the list is orchids. Orchids love humidity and indirect light, so they're a good pick for a shower. They add elegance to a shower, too. La Licata suggests wrapping an orchid's roots in moss, mounting it on wood, and hanging it on the wall. The moth orchid is a good pick for a beginner. Also from BetterHomesAndGardens.com, the simple seed starting trick that can jumpstart your garden seeds. Speed up germination for some veggies and flowers by soaking seeds before planting, by Leanne Potts. Soaking seeds before planting them mimics the favorable growing conditions after a spring rain. Water is what wakes up many types of seeds and tells them it's the right time to sprout. So do you need to soak seeds in water before starting them indoors or sowing in your garden? Well, that depends on the type of seeds. Here's what you need to know about which seeds to soak and how to try this technique correctly. Why to soak seeds before planting? All seeds have an outer coat that protects the plant embryo inside the seed. Some seeds have a thick exterior coat to shield that tiny plant inside from dryness, injury, fire, an animal's digestive tract, or disease. That tough outer coat is nature's way of protecting seeds until they have a more ideal moment to sprout into new plants. But when you're growing them at home, a tough seed coat can slow down germination. Soaking seeds in water hacks that protection system and makes seeds sprout faster. A pre-soak softens that outer protective coat so it absorbs water, helping the embryo to break dormancy and start growing. Because the softer coat is easier to split open, the baby plant spends less energy busting out and puts more energy into growing shoots and roots. If you live in a climate with a short growing season, soaking seeds before sowing can help you squeeze a few days or weeks of growing time for your plants. Soaked seeds sprout faster and turn into productive plants sooner. Which seeds to soak? Large seeds with tough coats can benefit from soaking before planting. These include several popular vegetable and flower seeds. Veggie seeds to soak: peas, squash, beets, peppers, beans, cucumbers, pumpkin, corn, and chard. And here's a tip. Super hard seeds, like beans, will benefit from nicking the seed coat with a sandpaper block, file, or sharp knife before soaking. This is a technique called scarification, and it lets water into the seed faster. Now here are some flower seeds to soak: nasturtium, sweet pea, lupine, and sunflower. Which seeds don't need soaking? Small seeds or seeds with thin coats do not need to be soaked. These include many types of veggies, such as tomatoes, basil, lettuce, cabbage, kale, carrots, chives, watermelon, and radishes. And many popular types of flower seeds, such as black-eyed Susan, zinnia, bachelor's buttons, and foxglove, also don't need soaking first. While it won't hurt the seeds to soak them, it won't help speed up their germination much. Plus, getting tiny seeds wet can cause them to clump together, making them harder to sow. How to soak seeds. Once you've selected seeds you want to soak, follow these simple steps to start the germination process. First, a day before you're ready to plant seeds, place them in a shallow bowl or other vessel and cover them with a few inches of warm water. Place them away from direct sunlight indoors where they can stay at room temperature. Let the seeds soak between 8 to 24 hours, long enough for the coats to soften and the seeds to swell, but not so long that they start to crack or rot. Soaking overnight is usually adequate for most seeds. Depending on the type of seed, they may increase in size or change color after soaking. Leaving seeds in the water too long can drown the plant embryo and cause the seeds to rot. After the soaking period, skim off any floating seeds. Older seeds especially may have gone bad and have air inside that makes them float. Keep the seeds that have sunk to the bottom of your bowl, indicating they have taken up enough water. Drain the water off the seeds. Depending on the size of the seed, you can dump the water and seeds into a fine mesh sieve or through a coffee filter. Then place your soaked seeds on paper towels to help wick up excess water. Finally, plant the seeds within a few hours of taking them out of the water. You've activated their germination process, so they're ready to sprout. During this time, it's critical that the seeds don't completely dry out again. From the February-March issue of Phoenix Home and Garden magazine, here's some questions that were sent in from readers. I fertilize the plants in my landscape each spring, but my neighbor never does. Their trees and shrubs look as healthy as mine do. Is it necessary to feed mine? And here's the answer. Arizona's desert soils are not high in nutrients, but in most situations you do not need to fertilize your plants. Our plant palette is primarily composed of native flora or those that come from similar arid climates that are accustomed to the soil nutrient levels we have. Too many nutrients, such as nitrogen, can stimulate excess foliage growth at the expense of blooms. For most plants, you can skip the fertilizer unless you see signs of nutrient deficiency, such as yellowing foliage. Those that do need feeding are container plants, flowering annuals, fruit trees, herbs, roses, and vegetables. Here's the next question sent in by a reader. My landscapers keep pruning my shrubs into round shapes. I prefer the natural shape of plants and would like more blooms. Do I need to pull my shrubs out and start over, or can I get rid of their formal shape? And here's the answer. Flowering shrubs are frequently sheared into formal shapes, and this practice is the default style of many landscape crews. However, this type of pruning isn't healthy for plants, as it shortens their lifespans, increases their water usage, and is unnecessary. In many cases, you can prune back shrubs to 12 inches tall to remove old growth and let them rejuvenate in spring. New growth will typically appear within 8 weeks. Moving forward, instruct your landscapers to allow your shrubs to grow to their natural shapes. If given enough room to grow, most will need pruning only once a year. Older or unhealthy plants may not grow back and can't be replaced with new ones. Here's the next question. I love the look of flowers in containers, but I don't have the patience for all the watering, fertilizing, and deadheading needed to keep them looking their best. Is there an alternative that will look pretty but will be less time intensive? And here's the answer. The great news is that flowering annuals aren't your only option for filling your pots with colorful plants. Many flowering shrubs are suitable for growing in containers where they add beauty to your outdoor spaces. They are an affordable alternative as they don't need to be replaced twice a year. Additionally, they require fewer applications of fertilizer and water. Use larger containers, at least 20 inches tall and wide, and plant bougainvillea, baja roelia, coral fountain, or yellow bells, which will provide color and interest with less work. Also for Phoenix Home and Garden magazine, monthly garden tasks. First, load mid elevations. Following package directions, feed citrus trees with citrus fertilizer around Valentine's Day. Spread fertilizer out over the root zone of the tree, which is the area that extends from the trunk to just beyond the reach of the branches. Lightly rake the fertilizer into the top inch of soil and water to help nutrients reach the roots. This is the first of three applications needed throughout the year, with the other times being in late May and early September. Keep an eye out for aphids, tiny green or brown soft-bodied insects that congregate on new growth. While most plants can handle some aphids without intervention, large amounts of the pests may cause wilting. Spray them off with a strong water jet from the hose or squash them by running your finger and thumb down the stem. Insecticidal soap can be sprayed on affected parts of the plant. Aphids appear on stems, flower buds, and on the undersides of leaves. Spring is their most active season, and they will usually disappear in the summer. Feed roses in March to help with bloom production throughout spring. Use an organic fertilizer formulated for roses, which lasts longer than synthetic formulations and helps create a beneficial environment for microorganisms that maintain healthy soil. Lightly rake the fertilizer into the top inch of soil and then apply a 3-inch layer of compost, which keeps roots at a comfortable temperature and improves the soil as it breaks down. The better the soil, the more flowers your roses will produce. Plant tomatoes out in the garden once the threat of freezing temperatures has passed. The earlier you get them in the garden, the longer they have to produce fruit before the heat sets in. Corn, cucumber, melons, and squash can be sown from seed once the weather begins to warm. Be ready to protect young plants and seedlings with frost cloth if a late freeze occurs. Monthly garden tasks for high elevations. March is a great time to prune plants, including trees, roses, and summer blooming shrubs. Cool season vegetables such as broccoli, carrots, cauliflower, leaf lettuces, and radishes can be planted once the soil temperature is above 45 degrees. A soil thermometer is a handy tool to help you determine when you can begin planting outdoors. Keep an eye out for freezing temperatures and protect frost tender plants as needed. From GardeningKnowHow.com, growing hostas in Colorado and the Southwest U.S. by Bonnie Grant. The American Southwest features a sunny, arid climate nearly year-round. Freezing temperatures do occur, but the majority of the region is hot. Hostas are plants that prefer part to full shade in organic, rich soil. They also need plenty of water. Hostas in New Mexico may not receive enough natural precipitation and will need a deep soak weekly. Colorado hostas, similarly, will need consistent moisture but also protection from the deep winter chills. Hostas are beautiful foliage plants with small flower spires. They come in a wide range of sizes, providing displays for any size of garden. Due to their cultural needs, hostas grown in the Southwest should be selected for drought and sun tolerance. Open areas of the landscape with little shade will produce poorly growing plants and will likely burn the gorgeous leaves. While the Southwest is characterized by high temperatures, areas like Colorado get extremely cold in winter. Site selection is the most important consideration for growing hostas in the Southwest. Can hostas grow in Arizona? The Southwest comprises Arizona, New Mexico, and parts of Colorado, California, Nevada, Texas, Utah, and Oklahoma. This lower portion of the U.S. has desert-like lands and, in some cases, actual deserts. In areas such as Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, and Texas, temperatures commonly soar to the triple digits, while evening temperatures during certain times of the day or year drop to freezing. Such wild ranges in a single day pose many challenges for plants that are not native. However, even hostas may be grown in the region. Hostas may perform well when they receive morning or late afternoon sun with shade during the heat of the day. The soil in the Southwest can be anywhere from silty to clay to loam. Soil should be amended with well-rotted compost prior to planting hostas to provide plenty of organic matter and porosity. Site selection for hostas. Hostas' large leaves can burn on the margins and tips in full sun situations, but they do need sun to produce flowers and maintain their leaf colors. Variegated hostas may fade in full shade situations. The best locations are on the north or east side of the home. Eastern plants will receive morning light and afternoon shade. Northern hostas will have afternoon sun. Avoid planting hostas in a southern or western facing direction. As a rule, blue-leaved plants need more shade, but variegated gold, white, or yellow leaves tolerate more sun. Hostas will grow well in containers as well, but with potted plants, the soil will dry out much quicker than in in-ground hostas. Expect to deeply water in-ground hostas once per week and container-bound plants when the soil is dry to the touch. General potting soil is sufficient for container-grown hostas, but a mulch over the top of the soil will conserve moisture. Caring for hosta in the Southwest. Hostas are quite stoic and have few pest or cultural problems. However, browsing animals love the plants. They should not be grown where deer are frequent visitors. Most other plants will ignore the plant, with the exception of slugs and snails. Average hosta water needs are around 1 inch per week, but a hosta plant Utah grown may experience different water needs from one in Arizona, especially in the fall and spring. Simply checking soil moisture levels with your hands is often the best way to determine if it's time to water. Another clue is wilting leaves, but yellowing leaves can be a sign there's too much water being applied. In good soil, hostas rarely need fertilizing. A diluted application in the spring in a high nitrogen formula will keep leaves happy. And who doesn't want that? And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book called Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called Blossy. It was written by Dan Barger. And there's a quote here from Augusta Carter: "You don't have a garden just for yourself. you have it to share. Blossy. I build gardens for people. In the past 12 years, I've built about 1,400 vegetable gardens in Portland, Oregon, almost all of them for people who didn't have the money to start a garden themselves. I bring everything in on a pickup truck, raised bed, frame, trellises, cages, seeds, starts, instructions, even the soil itself, and then I build the beds right on top of the people's lawns. I figure each garden costs about $500, most of which is covered by the grants I get from my foundation, the Home Gardening Project. And my wife and I don't mind living pretty frugally. Actually, we're as poor as church mice. But when you compare people's lives before they had gardens to their lives after, well, you know this work just has to continue. With each garden, I meet people who are in tough situations. An old woman who was nursing her stroke victim husband. A young and inexperienced mother with no husband around but several hungry children to feed. A poor woman who voluntarily cares for 5 abandoned children, all born with spina bifida or other congenital defects. I think I've gotten used to meeting people who have it hard. And still, sometimes the ravages of life take my breath away. I'll never forget a woman named Blossy. On the phone, she told me she was alone, on Social Security, and crack-addicted kids routinely broke into her house. She heard about the program, and she said she'd love a garden. She sounded very tired and rapidly aging, like many of the other 150 callers I responded to that spring. She was slow to answer the door when I arrived. It was a struggle for her to wheel herself backward with one hand and pull the door open with the other. First I saw the wheelchair, then her eyes, eyes that looked to have absorbed more pain than a combat surgeon's. Her face and hands were swollen. She had tried to cover her knees with a tattered towel, but I could see the white bandages caked with splotches of dried blood. And then I noticed the wheelchair again, quite clearly, because she had no calves or feet to obstruct the view. She just had her legs amputated after a lifetime of aggravating her diabetes with poor diet and bad habits. She told me she wanted a vegetable garden to help improve what remained of her health. She wanted a garden so she could go outside for a reason, get a little exercise, and have something to care for besides the little terrier at her side. Her house was embarrassingly messy and smelled of uneaten food and old bandages. She plaintively invited me in, but I politely excused myself. "I'm busy," I said. "I'll just go out back and scythe the garden." She insisted that she wanted to come with me, or at least shout from the back door where she wanted the garden built. I made a mental note to call the senior job center and ask them to build a handicapped ramp for her the day after I built her garden. Blossy's need seemed critical, so I bumped her up on my waiting list and told her I'd be by in 2 days with her garden on the back of my truck. For a second, her brave forbearance changed to a smile and her hands fluttered in anticipation. The garden was going to connect her to life. She could hardly wait. I'd have to build 5 gardens that day and break my promise to my wife that I'd make that spring an easy season. But my wife never expected me to keep that promise anyway. Facing Blossy, how could I say no? When I returned, I built Blossy's garden in the sunny strip behind her back door with easy access from the ramp that was scheduled to come in the next day or two. I built the 3 frames of her garden double high, filled with 6 cubic yards of premium soil, so she could easily reach it from her chair. I also supplied her with some tools I picked up at Goodwill, the handles cut to half length. She watched from the back door. Soon she was on the phone to a friend, telling her the news. "I know you want to get started as soon as you can," I said, handing her the seed packages and tray of starts. She took them into her lap like a Christmas present, her eyes lighting up in hope. Suddenly she wasn't listening anymore. She was ahead of herself, in the future, picking delicious tomatoes and basil for her summer salad, perhaps her only meal that day. She didn't seem to hear me say that I'd be happy to send someone around tomorrow to plant if she didn't feel like she had the energy to do it herself. The thought of needing such help didn't seem to cross her mind. She looked up and pointed to the old laundry sink out by the bushes. "Would I mind filling that up with dirt, too?" She wanted to grow some flowers, just for pretties, you know. When I drove past her place the next evening, she was heading down her new ramp, wheelchair in high gear, and she had the seeds and starts in her lap. Nothing could stop her now. It looked like another success story, similar to many others. It wasn't until summer rolled around that Blossy's story became different. While monitoring the gardens that August, I stopped in to see her. I expected to find her as I usually had, housebound, in pain, hungry for some human contact, especially contact that wouldn't hurt her. I was surprised by noise, the chatter and laughter of women coming from the backyard. I peeked over the back gate. Blossie was holding court from her wheelchair over six other aged women. She spotted me looking in and ordered me front and center right that minute. She was exuberant, talking a mile a minute, her hands waving like a girl's. The ladies were with her every step of the way, and they were all talking about the garden. Blossie introduced me. I offered the women free gardens, since they seemed to like Blossie so much. They made appreciative sounds, but all said no. And then one of them explained, "We already have a garden. This one. You see, we all live down at the housing project, the nine-story one. There isn't anything but a parking lot around it. No place for a garden." Blossie had called one of them weeks before asking for some help and companionship. Pretty soon all six of these residents were coming down twice a week to help Blossie with her garden, weeding, fertilizing, replanting, and watering. The garden, amazingly, was able to produce enough food for all of them to share. One of the women went inside and emerged with a tray of tea service, a gesture that made them laugh at themselves. After such long, hard lives, pretending to be genteel is silly, but fun. Looking around, I saw the garden itself was splendid, crowded with the vegetables Blossie likes to eat. And soon the women stopped noticing me. I left them to their happiness and occupation, glad to have had a hand in it. Blossie's garden had grown up and spread out, helping six people in need besides herself. It was a wonderful sight. People are always asking, what's the purpose of life? Well, that's easy. Relieve suffering. Create beauty. Make gardens. That's called Blossie, written by Dan Barker, one of the many stories that make up Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy, and we'll be talking with you soon.